This is Michael Coe from the Punk Rock and Politics Podcast, and you're listening to some of the best podcasts available on the internet, only on the No Phony Podcast Network.
Welcome to Heroes Garage. This is a weekly podcast where we review fantasy, science fiction, horror, and superhero shows and movies. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Doing really good. This is
the big game week for those of us who don't have the proper licenses. We can't say that we're talking about anything other than the big game, which this year is kind of an interesting matchup, isn't it?
It's exciting. It really is. You know, last year I actually picked San Francisco to go all the way, but Garoppolo got hurt, and so that ended that prediction, because I really thought they had a good defense. Well, they even got better, but because I was so enthralled in the Chicago Bears, I overlooked San Francisco's mighty strength. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Last year I predicted them because I knew they had a good team, and they only got better. Mm-hmm. And I don't, as much as they feel like they want to hand it to Patrick Mahomes, I think it could be reminiscent of the Denver-Seattle game where everybody was so high on Peyton Manning and they got utterly destroyed by the Seahawks.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's easy to put all of your eggs in a high-flying offenses basket like the Chiefs, but I think at the end of the day it's going to be very difficult if Kansas City can't stop the Niners from running the ball, which I don't think they will, and if the defense of the Niners slows Mahomes down enough, they're just not going to be able to catch up because San Francisco's just going to plow down their throat offensively
right.
when they get the ball.
Yeah. I'd like to see Kansas City win just because I do like Patrick Mahomes a lot. You know, Andy Reid, I'm respectful of, but I like the Chiefs. It's good to have a team that hasn't been in it in 50 years to finally be there. That's always very exciting. So I could imagine if you're a Chiefs fan, what it'd be feeling like right now.
Yeah, I'm definitely, my heartstrings are pulling in that direction, and I would love to see that happen. For all the reasons that you already stated, I would love to see that. But it's, yeah, if I were to guess, and we're not going to be predicting that today, I'm wondering. But I do think it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be a hard game.
Yeah, it should be a good game, actually. It's actually going to be fun to watch this time around. How's that?
Yeah, I do. I think it'll be good. And for once, we don't have an evil empire to root against. Necessarily,
yes.
Some view the Niners as an evil empire.
I don't know why, but, you know, whatever.
I can tell you why.
Why?
They've been there 6 times, and they've won 5. If they win this one, they're going to equal the Patriots for the most Super Bowl wins in league
history. Wow.
It'll be that quick. I mean, the Patriots, you know, all this histrionics over the past 20 years, all these playoff wins and Super Bowl appearances, and their record's going to be equaled probably this weekend by the Niners.
Well, what's interesting with the Patriots is they did it under the same quarterback and the same coach. So that has a lot more legs to it than just, you know, 3 with Montana, 2 with Steve Young, right? I mean, it's pretty incredible to be 5 with Brady, right?
It was 4, wasn't it, with Montana and 1 with Young?
Was it?
Yeah, 5 in a short period of time. It's pretty impressive when you think about it in the way they won. There is no doubt about it. We're going to get into the weeds here, and I don't mind it at all, actually. Is arguably a couple of bad coaches' decisions and a made field goal here and there. And the 11 appearances and 6 wins could very easily be 11 appearances and 2 or 3 wins from the Patriots.
That's true. That's true. You're right. Montana did have 4.
Yeah, so. And the Niners destroyed everything in their path when they won those Super Bowls.
Oh my gosh.
55-10 over the Broncos is one score I remember. 21-19, or was it over the Bengal? That was the closest Super Bowl, probably, right?
Right.
26-20, the first victory over the Bengals in 1980 or 81. That one felt a lot further apart than the final score showed in my world.
Yeah, they were just, they're beasts. You know, Joe Montana was a quarterback that you admired, I thought. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think that, you know, he had the cockiness or, I felt that he definitely was fun to watch. So, yeah, oh my gosh, 55-10, holy cow. Yeah, they had they had 2 close ones actually, 26-21, and then they had a 26-16 as well.
Like, what was the 2016? Who was the opponent in that one?
Yeah, the Bengals was the 26-21, and then the 2016. I'm trying to even do that from memory.
Well, one was pretty close. All I mean, the Bengals.
Well, the Bengals was 26. Oh, it was the no, the Bengals were both of them actually.
Yeah. Yeah, those ones were close games. There was another win in there somewhere. We can't remember who the opponent is. That's
great. They were close with both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know.
That's a Boomer. That's right. Boomer. Boomer, I think, lost both of them. Mm. Poor Boomer. He's a good announcer, though, but poor Boomer.
No, he didn't lose both of them. The first one was another guy, number 14.
Oh, yeah, that was,
Yeah.
Like, you know, the thing is, Tom, we do it even with our sports, don't we?
I mean, forget names and facts and everything important so people can track what we're saying. No, I think we're fine.
It just goes to show that those people who know something are actually looking at the data.
I think they are. I think they have it written out in front of them. And they're not guessing as much.
They're not flying at the seat. Kenny Anderson, there you go.
Yeah.
That's what Chris Collinsworth was, the deep threat.
Yep.
Dan Ross. Oh, yeah. They had a great team.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is when you go to look up some facts on the internet and they show you everything but what you searched. Have you ever noticed that? As I continue down this pathway of uninteresting conversation.
I think we should quickly make a segue, Tom.
Oh, well, let's expand our lens and look at outer space for a minute. We spent a good... umpteen minutes here, almost 10 minutes talking sports and forgetting all the facts and scores and names and everything. But we're here to review a show, Bill.
Yeah, a very good show. And a very good show that is climbing in its plot.
It continues its ascent, expanding the narrative.
Oh, and let's see how many times we can use expands.
Thank you. I'm going to have my little editing pen out and marking down on a napkin all the times that I need to go back to and remove things. The name of this episode, and we are on episode 5, season 4, is called Oppressor. Tensions on Illis are reaching a boiling point. Holden is revealing a secret, which of course has to do with the protomolecule. Avasarla is debating with her opponent and trying to win an election. Bobby is out involved in criminal stuff. That's kind of the big...
And the Belters have troubles of their own.
And the Belters, Naomi and Lucia, have made it back to that ship that I can't pronounce the name of. The Rosinante. How's that?
Close enough.
Is it? What's it actually called?
I don't know. Sounds great, though.
I'm glad that you said that too. they're not. Lucia is not out of the woods. She's got that humongous wound in the side of her, and she also doesn't feel very good about living because she made a choice that led to the death of 50 plus people in a spaceship.
Yeah.
The camp below is put on lockdown. Holden is struggling to keep the two sides from killing each other. And that's it. That's kind of what's going on. When you think of these narratives, Mr. Bill, and you, what do you think about the tensions, that the plot that shows the tensions elevating on Illis?
Well, what's interesting is the writer or the director is the same director in both of these episodes. Jeff Wilnoff, I think it was, and he did episode 5 and 6 in the previous season. There's a little factoid for you.
Symmetry.
So he did. And so he did another 5 and 6 episodes. So they're pulling him for 5 and 6. So I think that this is a bridge episode, or starting to bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Five and six. It does. Yeah, because we've talked about it, Bill.
Yeah.
That at some point they're going to have to transition to the proto molecule, leading to tons of chaos, right?
Right.
But
well, and it's interesting as all these other subplots are starting to rise to the top as well, right? You have the Avasarala. How do you say that?
Avasarala is what I call her.
She's in her debate, and then all of a sudden there's an emergency because a Belter ship is tumbling towards the Earth, and everyone, the Sojourner, and thought it was supposed to be destroyed, and the Earth defense platform is ready to shoot, and it's a very charged political thing that she has to make a decision on, protecting the Earth or, clearly identifying if this is a ship that is, you know, out of control, hurling through space because they have mechanical difficulties. So we see the plot rise in that character's decision, and then you jump to...
Even if I could comment on that.
Go ahead. Yeah, no,
this
go.
This is my commentary. It's a bit of much to do about nothing, right? Like, if you set up the system to protect the Earth from objects from hitting it, and the object happens to be a disabled ship, that they have decided through protocol that there's no other recourse but to shoot it out of the sky.
Right.
And it would make sense that you would want to get final verbal approval from a leader.
Right.
So it's not quite as random and horrendous, but I know it's an election year and
right. You
want to make some drama and you need things to be elevated. So there, how's that for me explaining?
No, it's good because it's all about these politicians. It's really about making the hard decisions a lot of times and making a quick decision. It's taking in all the data and quickly making an assessment to the best of your ability. And so you see her, because she has been in this position for a while, whether it's good or right, she, you know, was able to make a decision. And, in the election year it's just tough being a politician, and you could tell even her making the decision wore on her. Because it's not easy. It's not easy to be right, especially if you could be wrong.
Yeah, and finally that someone finally validates how I feel most of the time. It's not easy being so right and all of that. No. I digress. Where were you heading next? What's the next story?
Well, I was heading back into the... So, I guess the next biggest piece is, because there's three things really going on. Well, I would say, because Bobby really isn't in this, in the Mars episode, I think that we'll talk about that more in 6. So they really kind of limit... a lot of it is on Illis now. With Holden taking command of the settlement, And as the tensions are escalating, and, you know, and then he kind of reveals the fact that he, you know, he's got somebody living in his head, and everybody's like, oh, great, now this guy's a nutcase. So, which is great, because it just shows the volatility of Holden and how people will not trust him. And really, as a leader, he's very shaky on the surface. And but it was a great scene, because now the two groups are coming to a head, yeah. And there seems to be some, you know, situation. The planet is becoming volatile, and he wants to get people out of there.
I like the way you did that, the imagery and the irony in that statement that he's shaky on the surface because a fusion blast.
Fusion blast
that occurs, but I digress again. So yes, he's trying to wrestle some common sense back into the picture here, as Mercury is kind of been in elevated mode for a while, and the Belters are trying to defend themselves, and Holden in theory is the one with a little bit of rationale and calmness to himself,
right?
So
yeah, I mean, you have you have a new character with Lucia, and her husband, and, you know, they can't find their daughter, and there's a little drama going on because Lucia, you know, she tries to attempt suicide in the process because of guilt, and, because she was a part of the group that did the bombing, even though she did prematurely, detonate the bomb and made lives were lost anyway. But then, you know, there's an explosion on the other side of the island, and that kind of brings that episode to the head. And Mercury has kind of like this thing of, hey, we're just going to gas everybody, and
yeah.
he's extreme, but it, you know, as we predicted in the other podcast, is you could see that the tension was going to come to a head because the two sides hate each other.
Right, and they both have kind of dug into their version of the truth, and they are going to hold on to it for dear life, is what we're thinking, and then we have to just see where it goes, right?
Well, the interesting thing is that I didn't think Mercury was right at all, but then he turned out being right, and then that kind of validates his position. Because they didn't really, it was all speculative. Because you look at Mercury as this loose cannon, and you don't really want to believe him because he really wants to incite violence. He's the heavy hand, and then it turns out that he's right. Kind of changes perspective quite a bit. I thought that was a great part of the show, that, you know, that it was sabotaged. They were ready to blow up the ship, and so I like that twist, honestly, because it's easy to, and you know, with TV shows, it's always easy to peg the bad guy, right?
Right.
And he's just evil, and he's a thug no matter what. But, man, don't you hate it when the thug is right?
Or the reactionary. And,
so that's great writing, I think. That little aspect I thought was really good. That was a good reveal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was good. I didn't have a wow response to that, but that's okay, right?
Yeah,
it's okay. It went well enough, and it all makes sense. I think what works for me is that it's not out of, you don't see anything. So I've talked about this before. The show has a job to do, and the job they have is to communicate to us how to think about what we're watching. And they do it through characters, cinematography, they do it through narratives and stories, they do it in these different ways. And this show maintains its integrity to what it's teaching us about the characters, about their motivations, about the larger story narratives. It all lines up tracks and makes sense. And they continue that trend in this episode. So there's my overarching wah-wah-wah.
Right. No, that makes good. I mean, that's just all the markings of a well-written show. And, know, they stay away from the cliches. I think that's the best part, is stay away from the tropes, as Tom would say.
Mm-hmm, and the MacGuffins.
The MacGuffins, whatever term Tom Zim wants to throw out to the public.
Which I stole from somebody else, and someone else's bag. They threw it out there. I picked it up off the ground and I used it.
Hey, you know, that's the greatest form of flattery, right?
Yes, I'm out here. One of my goals in this is actually to see how many people I can flatter by using their opinions.
Yeah, I think benefit you just myself. Identify. If you want to take a step further, you could always just identify who you're trying to flatter. But anyway.
That would really get interesting, wouldn't it?
That would be like name dropping brands during the episode, hoping that you would get some marketing money. So,
but
that's not going to happen either.
Oh, ESPN does that is they actually quote themselves. If you listen to their podcast and their broadcast, they're doing exactly what you're saying, but they're not jumping on someone else's coattails. It's like I said, actually, I just did that in this my own podcast. Today I've done that. Never mind.
So that's that was kind of wrapping up a five. Five was the stitch to six, honestly. You had to get through five to get to six. It's amazing how these shows just show numerical value, right? The five is then followed by six. So
is there a deeper point here?
No.
That sounded a lot like something I would do. I'm like, Bill's falling into one of my problems.
I think we're just, that's what happens when we do a podcast with each other. We just pick up our strengths and weaknesses.
I know, I'm like, Bill's cadence has slowed considerably since we started doing this. He used to have such clear thoughts that came out so clearly. Now it's like deliberate. It takes him a long time. Hey, that sounds like me.
He's thinking too much. Just say it, Bill.
Just say it, Bill.
Okay,
we're moving on
so
to
we're
six.
Number I'll, six now. We're
I'm gonna just... tell. I'll tell everybody why, because not a lot happens in five. Okay, let's
no,
set
no,
it.
No, no, no. Okay. That's it. We try to make five more than it really was. I mean, you throw this kind of trope, political thing to fill the what's really going on with the protomolecule, right? I mean, it's kind of carrying the subplot, but really the protomolecule is ramping up, and that's where all the drama is. And so the five leads to really kind of the cool stuff that is about to happen in six.
Yes, it is. So this is called displacement. The protomolecule became more proactive.
Yeah.
It's past
it's alive.
Destruction. And there's an explosion, and we're hearing words like fusion, like the blue baby. We're hearing things like, our spaceships don't work. And we have these people trapped on Illus that were depending on spaceships and shuttles to come down and rescue them. That's not happening. And there's nothing like a little bit of an emergency, a real emergency, a capital E, to get warring factions to have to figure out how to get along. Right, Bill?
Yeah, that's what makes it, this episode really cool, because it's actually a tidal wave of events that actually happen out of the massive explosion. Wouldn't you say so, Tom?
I would say so. I would say that it begins to wash over you as a viewer. The pressure they are under to find safe haven from this blast.
Funny. So you get this massive explosion. You know, they're stuck. They realize there is a huge, catastrophic tsunami heading their way. And, but before that is 200 mile per hour winds that's from the blast is traveling first before the tsunami. So yes, now everybody has to, they're going to go to where the relic is, because that's something, that structure is dug in deep and it's, impenetrable. And everybody's going to be making their way there after the plans of sending these pods to come in just doesn't work, which really just escalates the drama, because it reveals later on in the episode that those big ships that are orbiting the planet are going to end up plummeting toward the planet too, because it messed with their fusion reactors. So, man, they really kind of layer the drama with the catastrophe really well. They just don't limit to the planet. They've already extended it to the other ships the area.
And they use the other story narratives to give us some framework as far as time. And yeah. I will explain myself. Ashford and Drummer, they get confronted by the UNN people, and they call Ashford out for letting Marcos go and letting the Sojourner go.
Yep.
And that was the plot that we talked about ad nausea in episode 4, mm-hmm. where they rolled dice and Bill's theory was confirmed. Ashford made that decision so that she would avoid a fraction, in factions in the groups. And they had to roll dice on it. And Drummer calls out the obvious, is that you can't always predict the future. But within that, we learn that the UNN is 15 days away from Illis. Is that what it sounds like? Or is that something I just made up off the top of my head? Which is fine if I did.
Yeah, I think so. Because they're ready to go and shut everything down. That's what it appears as. So now the Belters are being confronted. And they have egg on the face, because now they are stuck with this renegade, and are they going to be able to rally the other factions, the other Belter, to go and pursue this guy before the UNN just shuts down all of Belter's freedom? And so that's a real powerful piece in the subplot, because they have been somewhat the guardians of the ring, and with that responsibility, and now it shows that they're incapable of being unified and really having any kind of court of law.
Yeah. And then beyond that, there's some other subplots. Bobby's further entrenched in this criminal group, and it feels like those tentacles are going deeper, and she's getting riskier and riskier along with that group. That whole narrative is continuing on. And then if I were to transition quickly, although this is like a completely different topic, Lucia is starting to get confronted even further with the decisions she made while on Illis as part of that group that led to the shooting down of that medical spaceship. And so all of those narratives are continuing to track as well.
Yeah, it's things are starting to come to a head. Mercury doesn't like the fact that now he and the Belters have to be together, and they're going to have to be unified to save themselves from the tsunami. So that's becomes a thing with him. But like you said, is nothing like a good old catastrophe to level the playing field and have everybody really focus in on survival.
And that is interesting, isn't it? Sorry.
I'm sorry. Were you tuning your trumpet back there?
It's been a nasally and congested week. Yeah.
Oh, so, baby.
That was me going in character as kind of a nameless Belter.
Who spent in the background? You're the extra.
Yes, I'm the extra. I'm in the background. I'm in that relic station. I've been in there wet and cold for weeks. Well, 15 days waiting for the UN.
More like 15 minutes anyway.
That was me just going in character for a moment. So there's a lot going on with the Belters. There's stuff going on with Ashford and Drummer. Bobby's getting in deeper and deeper. Those are kind of the main narratives. Is there any other main story narrative that we're forgetting to mention?
Well, I guess a little bit more about Bobby, and her team. we saw them have a heist and she got paid and she's, you know, she was like, wow, I got paid a lot. Then they have another heist and she become, you know, she, the hero in her comes up with a plan because they can't open the door and, you know, the code fails and she goes in to climb the tower to disable the hydraulics. And then there's somebody that, you know, is in the way, but it really further cements her in the team as, you know, she's all in. And, which, you know, I think that if she has an alternate plan of exposing the team one day, nothing like, you know, putting your life on the line and having the team recognize that, help. So, cause I still believe that Bobby, because she is a hero, never really fully intends to live a criminal life.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we continue to hope is the case, right? Because we look at her and think that she is a good person. She's not going to do anything that stupid. And ultimately, she's doing whatever she's doing to protect her family. Like, she doesn't have bad motives. And I think I'm going to pick a line from Mr. Bill over there. That's what I give that. I attribute that to good writing. There is, we tend to be pulling for her, even though she's making a lot of choices that seem to be criminal ones in the moment.
Yeah. The alternative with her would be that, the man let her down and she's just in it for her own survival, whether it is criminal activity or not, where she can make a buck. You know, protect the family and, you know, just really have a way of generating income. And,
I like that actually. I like that. That sounds better than the single motivation of family, but the man let her down, which that happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
That tracks. Yep. It also puts a little edge to her and she has an edge.
Oh yeah.
So I actually like that.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting how she furthers within the group, because you could only think that each job is going to be even more risky than last, right?
Yeah.
Because as you go for a bigger prize, more money, because the group that you're, which are a bunch of belters, right, that you're supplying these arms to, they're only going to demand for bigger prizes. And it's one of those things that as you continue, You get the bullets, now you get the guns, now you get the mortars, now you get the missiles, right? Mm-hmm. So that it seems like the jobs are progressing that way. And, that makes it more complicated in their plans, where this could be a completely, something that goes south, or, you know, it becomes a matter of conscience of, what are we actually doing this for anyway? So it has a plenty of outcomes. And with the story, you really don't know where it's going to go, because they did a good job just hiding everything.
Yeah. Although right now you're triggering a need in me to guess where the story is going to go.
Hey, that's part of podcast, is predicting.
So let's pontificate. Let's extrapolate from the data points that we've established. Create a trajectory here and see if we can't kind of get a propensity of the evidence leading us towards an outcome. And what I will say is going to happen is, indeed, okay, this is what's set up, right? We've established this, that there's not only going to be the people that are currently in the relics trapped on Illus, but there's a potential that the people in the spaceships whose fusion reactors have gone kaput, that those individuals will also be landing on the planet in emergency fashion.
Right.
And competing with that is this idea that the UNN and the Belter group with Ashford and Drummer, that somehow they get involved and start helping. The wild card is the proto molecule. We don't know what that thing's going to keep on doing.
Yeah, and that's always going to really change the course of everybody. because as we know, and they often allude to, is the protocol has the ability to wipe out civilizations. So
proto molecule, right? Not
proto molecule. I'm sorry, I said that wrong.
That's okay. You're trying to get complicated, and
I'm trying to get complicated, and I'm spitting out the wrong words. So that's what happens. So I think that it's good because everybody in the end, with the political, with the Mars, is going to actually have to react. Because it could be one of those scenarios that you just can't run away from. But you have to be part of the solution. So I think with Bobby, my prediction is she gets caught. And she is going to look at serving time, and I believe Avasarala comes to her rescue, and she becomes a part of her entourage, because Bobby already turned it down, and it seems like the only way that Bobby will join her is if she has to. And so that's I think that those two are destined to be together. I could be way off base, but that's just my podcast prediction.
Okay, it's my turn to make a bold prediction, because that one sounded really, really trackable. And I'm going to go, you went believable. Like, you went the metaphorical version of Daredevil, right? Gritty,
right.
Earthy, asphalt. Can smell the exhaust in the air. That's the Bobby narrative. I'm going to go fantastic here, like a Dragon Ball Z level. I think that all these folks that are shacked up in these relics on Illus, that right. those things are actually going to turn into spaceships and fly off that planet.
Ooh, interesting. So what's actually uncovered is a spaceship.
Yes.
And so... what's going on in Holden's head is really when they, you know, when he pulled away that vine, when mm-hmm. Miller told him to pull away the vine, and it kind of did a chain reaction of something mm-hmm. that might be the chain reaction that needed to get the spaceship to start powering up. I like it. I like it.
That's what I think is going on.
That's good. No, I like it.
That's gonna whole thing's gonna power up in some way. It's not gonna be as ridiculous and stupid as my idea sounds, but it'll be some version of that.
You mean while everybody's there and everybody all of a sudden they're in and it just starts shaking?
Yeah, and the whole planet, all the dust and water just drips off of it.
Right. Which still could happen. Because how else is a spaceship gonna come out of the sand, Tom?
I think that's what's happening, actually. I'm gonna own my...
You're going to put your stake in that ground?
I am. I am staking claim to that guess.
That's worthy. That's worthy. It's a good prediction. That seems like it has some legs to it.
Yeah, that's going to be my prediction.
All right,
Else we should talk about with this episode before we...
No, it's like, you know, the tsunami came. I thought they were actually going to kill Holden off. I was like, wow, they might actually kill Holden off. That'd be interesting. He's in the middle of it, or he, you know, somehow he's floating around the waves and, you know, Miller comes to him like, now what'd you go do that for?
You know, I just had a thought.
Oh, another one.
Yeah, another thought. How would you react? Okay, the tsunami's coming, right?
Right.
And what did that door remind you of?
The door that yeah. he was trying, they're all trying to open and or it's, to close?
Yeah, what did that remind you of?
Oh, you're going to have to tell me.
It reminded you a little bit of the door on the Ark.
Oh my gosh. Totally. Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh.
I just
the spaceship thing is now coming to fruition.
It's going to be floating on water like an ark.
Oh, or, here you go, wait.
Okay, paddle us there.
Following this through, the tsunami washes away the sand, so you see the ship, right?
Right.
Just like Noah in the ark, when he finally landed the ark, yeah. Now you see, wow, that structure is actually a ship.
That's I think we have it.
I mean, come on, a tsunami? How else are you going to get the sand to wash away, Tom?
I do. I think they give you these visual clues that get the brain thinking, and you don't really know what parts of your brain are doing some of the time, at least if you're me. And I think that the writers, they knew what they were doing when they had that door look just like Noah's Ark.
There you go. I think you're good. I think we got it. It gets figured out. Can't wait to see it actually come to truth. You didn't see the next episode, did you?
No. I've been actually very disciplined. Those people who have actually watched all episodes are listening to this like what a couple of knuckleheads. But we are protecting ourselves. We are not steaming ahead.
When we make these bold predictions, it's not like, oh, we're making a bold prediction. And we already saw it, tongue-in-cheek, wink-wink.
No, we have not watched it. Because that is the fun in this, is taking our time and pretending like it's a serialed show, not like Serial itself in a box, but a serialed show, which comes out week to week, where we have to wait an entire week and the tension builds.
Yes, it's like you have a 3-layer chocolate cake and you're just pacing yourself.
That leads me to a story. I'm so glad you brought that up. Years ago, when I was a young'un, my older
brother,
just a young lad, my brother and I, his name is Pete, he's older than, I can use his name because he was on the podcast once, he helped us review the Star Wars movie Solo.
That's right.
We stayed home sick from church, and my mother gave us a couple of guidelines, but one very clear guideline.
Oh no.
Yes, and it involved cake. And okay, there. You guys are staying home, but you're not allowed to touch the chocolate cake. So, the chocolate cake is in a pan, and there's already been a solid roll removed, as people have had like 2 or 3 pieces. It's one of those square pans that's like a 12 by 18, so I guess a rectangle pan.
Right.
And so, that's just too much temptation to resist, right? I mean, there's already part of the cake.
Especially when two young boys are faking sickness from church.
Yes, and we started to eat. And
oh, boy. The best thing is not even to say, don't eat that cake. It's like, don't eat that apple, Tom.
I know. And for a while, I thought, I thought she was actually giving me permission to eat the cake because Adam and Eve were told not to eat the apple and they ate it. She had to know, right?
She had to know.
She had to know if she left us home with cake and she knew the story about Adam and Eve. You put two and two together, that was actually permission she was giving us. That was it.
Did she say not to eat it, or she'd say, go ahead and eat it?
She said, do not eat the cake.
I think she said, go ahead and eat it. That's what you heard.
Absolutely. And let's just say that we got a tongue lashing when we got
oh my gosh, but the cake was good. Well, see, you weren't eating the cake slow. You were eating the cake.
We were, and I will say that was one consequence, a natural consequence for my choices that I do not regret to this day. The cake was so good that the punishment I received later was well worth it. And that was the dice I had to roll when I did the math. There was some arithmetic involved in this.
There was. It sounds like it.
Oh, there you go.
Oh my gosh. These triggers that send Tom.
And that's why we podcast and that's why we do these shows, right? They remind us of these dilemmas, these life dilemmas.
Oh, that's so funny, though. So, I think I need to finish this and wrap it up so I can have some cake.
I know, right? Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode, Mr. Bill.
Oh, man. I can't wait to see the rest of this show. It's been a very good show.
Yeah, it has. And we'll watch. There's 10 episodes in total. We'll probably hit a couple of them heading out here, and then we'll be able to talk a little bit about how the Chiefs and probably improbable win over the Niners panned out, right?
We'll see.
We will see. So for now and until next time, this has been Heroes Garage.